creation of Lord Brahma, we heard how... Who remembers the first creation of Lord Brahma? Ignorance. And then? Knowledge. Immediately, the four Kumaras. And then? Anger. And then one after another. Then Lord Brahma manifested 10 very wonderful sons, who were the 10 great sages, who were such pious living entities. But most of their activities had to do with fruitive work, which means work according to the Vedic scriptures that brings us material benefit. So that is wonderful. Material happiness is wonderful. Everyone is longing for that. But it keeps one within the material world, which is like a prison, and inhibits our actually taking our true, eternal, natural, constitutional relationship with Krishna in the spiritual world in Goloka Vrindavan. So even that type of piety that the sages taught, great sages, Bhrigu, Pulaha, Marichi, Pulastya, Vashishta. Vashishta Muni is so old and so powerful that he was also the priest of Maharaj Dasarath. And then we hear, practically speaking, that he was in the ninth canto, we hear that Vashishta practically kept on living and living and living and living, and he was the priest of so many dynasties, millions of years. And then, but the greatest of all the sons of Brahma, the one who was actually capable of fulfilling the ultimate purpose of the universe, was Narada Muni, who travels all over the universe. And we've heard about him in the first canto, and we'll hear about him further in the fourth canto, so many places. Narada goes around and gives Krishna conscious instruction. He gives mercy to so many living entities. We hear about him in the seventh canto, tenth canto, so many places we hear about him. So after Narada Muni was born in Kratu, Bhrigu from his touch, Pulaha from the navel of Brahma, then after the 10 great sages were manifest, religion, religiosity, dharma, stana dakshinato, religion was manifest from the breast of Brahma, wherein, in the heart, is seated the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan. And irreligion appeared from Brahma's back, where horrible death takes place for the living entity. So there has to be so much variegatedness, so much variety within the creation, because there are so many living entities and they each have their own desires, and each has to be facilitated. They have their desires and they want specific things, and the universe is arranged so that everyone can fulfill their desires. So, then lust and desire became manifested from the heart of Brahma. Anger from between his eyebrows, greed from between his lips, the power of speaking from his mouth, the ocean from his penis, and low and abominable activities from his anus, the source of all sins. Then the sage Kardama, husband of the great Devahuti, this happens later and will be described quite soon, just in quite a few chapters later in the third canto, the match between Devahuti and Kardama Muni. Kardama Muni was one of the great sons of Brahma, as we hear. He was manifest from the mind of Brahma. And then Devahuti, as we'll hear later on, was one of the daughters of Swayambhuva Manu. So the son of Brahma marries later on marries the daughter of Swayambhuva Manu, and a result of that, there is the incarnation of the Lord Kapila Muni will be born. Thus, all became manifested from either the body or the mind of Brahma. And it says that Kardama Muni was a great sage. He was born of the mode of goodness. But Narada, different from him, was born of transcendence. His mood was beyond the mode of goodness because he was not controlled by goodness, but he was controlled by Krishna directly. This is actually the goal of Krishna consciousness, to place ourselves fully under Krishna's control. O Vidura, we have heard, Maitreya Muni continues. Now there's some verses here up till from 28, 29, then up to 32 that describes something very wonderful that Maitreya is going to tell Vidura. How Brahma had a daughter and he was attracted in a sexual way to his own daughter, and what was the result of that. So Maitreya Muni describes, O Vidura, we have heard that Brahma had a daughter named Vak, who was born from his body and who attracted his mind towards sex, although she was not sexually inclined towards him. So this is a very amazing incident, very improper in one sense. So it's going to be discussed by Srila Prabhupada in the verses from different points of view. Here is Prabhupada's point in his purport in this verse. Here's in the last paragraph of the purport. One should, however, take serious note of this incident. The human being is a social animal, and his unrestricted mixing with the fair sex leads to downfall. Such social freedom of man and woman, especially amongst the younger section, is certainly a great stumbling block on the path of spiritual progress. Material bondage is due only to sexual bondage, and therefore unrestricted association of man and woman is surely a great impediment. Maitreya cited this example on the part of Brahma just to bring to our notice this great danger. So nowadays this danger is taken as the greatest of blessings, that removing these past restrictions of the dealings between men and women, that women have a particular place and men have a different place. No, now everything is one. But it, of course, it doesn't work like that. When Prabhupada said, you want to be equal, one time, he was speaking, I don't remember the exact circumstance, but he was speaking to one, I don't know whether it wasn't a Mataji, I'm sure, woman or lady, I don't know what the proper term, but he said, if men and women are equal, then why is it that women have the child after the combination? Why is it that the women have the child and not the men? The men had some enjoyment, the women had some enjoyment, but the woman gets the child, to bear the child and undergo the difficulties and pain of childbirth. So how can there possibly be equality in that sense, where it's obvious, it's clear, that there is no equality by nature's arrangement? The result of the combination of man and woman is completely different. So where is there equality? How is it equal? The man gives birth to half the baby and the child gives birth to the other half? No. So what people are thinking of as progress is actually ignorance. This is actually the Bhagavad Gita's definition of ignorance. That which should not be done is thought of as good, and that which is good is thought of as something that should not be done, just the opposite. So this is a great stumbling block on the path of spiritual progress. It's even a stumbling block on the path of material happiness. So the sages, they were astounded by Brahma's attraction. So thus finding their father so deluded in an act of immorality, the sages, headed by Marici, all sons of Brahma, spoke as follows with great respect. So Prabhupada explains in the purport that when a great person does something like this that's improper, and who are not exactly under the control of the modes of material nature, it is like a show with a great purpose behind it. There's a plan, there's Krishna's desire, he's teaching through it. So Prabhupada explains in the purport that they were thinking, they knew very well, the sages knew very well, so therefore they continued with respect, that even though their father committed a mistake, there must have been some great purpose behind the show. Otherwise, such a great personality could not have committed such a mistake. It might be that Brahma wanted to warn his subordinates about human frailties in their dealings with women. This is always very dangerous for persons who are on the path of self-realization. Therefore, great personalities like Brahma, even when in the wrong, should not be neglected, nor could the great sages headed by Marici show any disrespect because of his extraordinary behavior. So Marici said, and the sages said, O Father, this performance in which you're endeavoring to complicate yourself was never attempted by any other Brahma, nor by anyone else, nor by you in previous kalpas, nor will anyone dare to attempt it in the future. You are the supreme being in the universe, so how is it that you want to have sex with your daughter and cannot control your desire? Even though you are the most powerful being, this act does not suit you because your character is followed for spiritual improvement by people in general. So something similar occurs in the sixth canto when Chitraketu Maharaj sees Parvati and Lord Shiva intimately sitting together. So Chitraketu says something. He's flying above in a plane as one of the Vidyadharas. And he says something that was like a criticism of Lord Brahma, of Lord Shiva. Actually, it wasn't a criticism. But he was saying that this is the example should not be followed. But when Parvati heard this, it sounded like a criticism to her, and she became furious and cursed Chitraketu. That you are speaking like a demon, because great personalities like Lord Shiva or Lord Brahma or Lord Krishna, when they do something, their mentality is completely different from when we do something. So we imagine he's doing this or that, and if I was doing it, my mood would be in a particular way. But actually their mood is something completely different. They purify. They don't get contaminated. And the example that Prabhupada gives is like the sun. When the sun contacts a filthy place, rather than the sun being contaminated, the sun is so powerful that the filthy place is purified. So similarly, Lord Shiva, his sitting with Parvati, was faultless. And similarly, Lord Brahma, his dealing with his daughter, is faultless. Although it is improper in one sense, it is still, there is not exactly a fault in his side. There is some lila going on that Krishna wants to teach. So, the principle is, if anything is a fault, it's a bad example. So, as Prabhupada explains in the purport, one who fills the post of Brahma must be ideal in behavior, for Brahma sets the example for all living entities. Brahma, the living entity who is the most pious and spiritually elevated, is entrusted with a post next to that of the personality of Godhead. So Marici continues, even though you are the most powerful being, this act does not suit you because your character is followed for spiritual improvement by people in general. There is a verse later on in the Bhagavatam in the 10th canto, but the Ishwaras, when they act in a particular way, we always have to be careful not to imitate them because they have a different mentality. They are controllers, they are powerful, they are pure, they are like the sun. But yet, on the other side, there is the point of view of Yajyaracharati Srishta. That's what they do. It sets an example. So, Marici then said in text 32, "Let us offer our respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead, who by his own effulgence, while situated in himself, has manifested this cosmos. May he also protect religion for all goodness. The father of all Prajapatis." So what happened was, they asked him, "Why are you doing this?" But yet they were, Brahma was very much captivated on one level. So they prayed. They did not want the principles of religion to be disturbed, because this was an irreligious act for the people to follow. So therefore they prayed that the Lord protect the principles of religion. And Prabhupada explains in the purport, "The great sages, the great sons, began to pray to the Supreme Lord for the good sense of Brahma. It is only by the grace of the Supreme Lord that one can be protected from the allurement of lusty material desires. The Lord gives protection to devotees who are always engaged in his transcendental loving service." There is no other way, actually, to receive protection. The way is to be protected by Krishna. And a devotee, therefore, knowing the fragility of his position in the material world, he's always praying for Krishna's protection. Always. He thinks himself always tiny and dependent upon Krishna's mercy, while a conditioned soul with a big false ego is thinking just the opposite. He's thinking that I am very, very, very powerful. Does anyone dare and defy me? But a devotee actually becomes powerful because Krishna protects him, due to his full dependence on Krishna in a serving mood. So therefore, the Lord gives protection to devotees who are always engaged in his transcendental loving service. And by his causeless mercy, he forgives the accidental fall of a devotee. Therefore, sages like Marici prayed for the mercy of the Lord, and their prayer was fruitful. Next verse. "The father of the Prajapatis, Brahma, thus seeing all his Prajapati sons speaking in that way, became very much ashamed, and at once gave up the body he had accepted. Later, that body appeared in all directions as the dangerous fog in darkness." So after himself falling into ignorance, Brahma gave up the body. Prabhupada explains such very, very heavily in the purport. This is a lesson for the living entities, showing how sinful an act it is to be indulged in unrestricted sex life. Even to think of abominable sex life is sinful. And to compensate for such a sinful act, for such sinful acts, one has to give up his body. In other words, one's duration of life, blessings, opulence, etc., are decreased by sinful acts. And the most dangerous type of sinful act is unrestricted sex. Ignorance is the cause of sinful life. Well, sinful life is the cause of gross ignorance. Because out of ignorance, we think we identify with the body and we do so many things to satisfy the body. So that is ignorance. Ignorance of who we are in relationship to Krishna. So ignorance causes sinful life, and then sinful life covers us and causes more ignorance. So sinful life is the cause of gross ignorance too. The feature of ignorance is darkness or fog, because by darkness or fog, the light or the sunlight is covered. Agam dunvanti kachneya. Anyone know the last line of that verse? Niharam eva bhaskaram. That by taking shelter of Krishna, someone who is fortunate takes shelter of Krishna. Kichit kevalaya bhakta narayana parayana. One who is very fortunate takes shelter of Krishna, and by taking shelter of Krishna, agam dunvanti kartsneya, all one's sins are destroyed, just like niharam eva bhaskaram, just like the sun destroys the fog. So this is what Narada Muni is teaching. This is the purpose of the creation. This is what Prabhupada taught. This is what the Bhagavad Gita teaches. This is what the Bhagavatam teaches. That we have to learn the art of taking shelter of Krishna. We have to do this. Not we have to in the sense that we have no alternative. But it is really in our interest to learn this art. To take shelter of Krishna constantly, fully, in devotion, in service. Then all ignorance, sinful reactions are dispelled. Niharam eva bhaskaram, just like the sunlight dispels fog. So Brahma, he gave up that body that had caused him to act improperly or think improperly, and it turned into fog, ignorance. And then, so that ended these instructions given by Brahma, about Brahma, or the description of Brahma's ignorance of becoming improperly attracted to his own daughter for enjoyment. So there's warnings in there, and yet other instructions as well about how such great powerful people really aren't to be criticized, yet they have to set a good example. Yet, even if Krishna always protects them, yet even if they have some trouble, Krishna will forgive. Apichet sudarachiro bhajate mamananyavak. And yet, when there's difficulty, we pray for the protection of religious principles. So that little pastime has been explained. Then the creation continued. The father of the Prajapatis means the protector of all those who protect the praja, or the citizens, or the living entities, or the descendants. The father of all the Prajapatis, so those 10 sages are called the Prajapatis. Thus seeing all his Prajapati sons speaking in that way, became very much ashamed, and at once gave up the body he had accepted. Later that body appeared in all directions as a dangerous fog and darkness. Then once upon a time, now it is the time, so darkness is created, now knowledge is created, and the culture of knowledge. So from here until text 48, which is almost the end of the chapter, what's going to be described is the creation of the Vedic culture in all its elements by Brahma. Because a culture brings forward particular qualities. So the materialistic culture brings forward specific qualities, and the Vedic culture brings forward other qualities. What the Vedic culture brings forward within human beings is spiritual qualities. So once upon a time, when Brahma was thinking of how to create the worlds, as in past millenniums, the four Vedas, which contain all varieties of knowledge, became manifested from his four mouths. The four kinds of paraphernalia for conducting the fire sacrifices became manifest. Here's the four kinds of paraphernalia. These are the four priests. Chatahutram. The four kinds of paraphernalia, which are the chanter, the performer of the sacrifice, the offerer, the fire, and the actions performed in terms of the supplementary Vedas, the Upa Vedas. Also the four principles. Upavedas. Also, the four principles of religiosity, truth, austerity, mercy, and cleanliness, and the duties in the four social orders all became manifest. So these principles of religion became manifest, and along with them, Vanashram became manifest. So the four principles of religion are truthfulness, austerity, mercy, and cleanliness. And one by one, as the yugas progress from Satya Yuga to Kali Yuga, these are removed. So in Kali Yuga, only truthfulness remains, and that is being diminished continuously as well. Then Vidura asked, O great sage, whose only wealth is penance, kindly explain to me how and with whose help Brahma established the Vedic knowledge which emanated from his mouth. Maitreya answered, he said, beginning from the front face of Brahma, gradually the four Vedas, the Rig, Yajur, Sama, and Atharva, became manifest. Thereafter, Vedic hymns, which had not been pronounced before, priestly rituals, the subject matters of the recitation and transcendental activities were all established one after another. He also created the medical science, the military arts, musical arts, architectural science, all from the Vedas. They all emanated one after another, beginning from the front face. So all these different arts, which are so important in Vedic culture, in any culture, music, art, etc., these were all created one by one by Brahma. Then he created the fifth Veda, the Puranas and the histories, all from his mouth, since he could see all the past, present, and future. All the different varieties of the fire sacrifices became manifest from the eastern mouth of Brahma. Education, charity, and truth are said to be the four legs of religion. Now this is quite interesting. Education, charity, penance, and truth are said to be the four legs of religion. And to learn this, there are four orders of life with different classifications of castes according to vocation. Brahma created all these in systematic order. This is the Vanashrama system. Here's Prabhupada's purport. The nucleus, or the center of the four social orders, brahmacharya, or student life, grihastha, or household family life, vanaprastha, or retired life for practicing penances, and sannyas, or renounced life, for preaching the truth, is the four legs of religion. So, that means that the first is education. And the brahmacharis, that is specifically what brahmacharya is meant for. Spiritual education. Then, the next order is household of life, or the grihastha ashram. So what is the leg of religion that the grihastha ashram stands upon? It is charity. Prabhupada was once asked by a householder what are the duties, what he was a newly married man, and Prabhupada was asked, what are the duties of a householder? And Prabhupada replied, before you eat, you should go to the door and call out three times. If anyone is hungry, you come now and eat. If anyone is hungry, here, you come and eat. There is food for you. If anyone is hungry, come and eat. So the devotee was somewhat astounded. He thought Prabhupada didn't understand him properly. So he asked again, Prabhupada, what are the duties of householders? Because he was expecting something completely different. And Prabhupada repeated the same thing again. Because what happens in householder life, the tendency is to become so absorbed in what? In selfishness. One's consciousness becomes smaller and smaller. One's needs become greater and greater. And no matter how much one has, one never thinks one has enough. One's selfishness expands as one's family and one's needs expand. So therefore, what one has to learn in household life is the mood of charity, giving. giving to others. And Prabhupada explained that during his childhood, when his father, at every meal, there would be guests. There would be sadhus and these people and that people. So many guests sharing what one has. His father was not even wealthy. But that mood of giving counteracts the tendency for the heart to contract and become smaller and harder and harder and harder. So that is the primary leg of religion that the household of Grihastha Ashram rests upon. And then the third leg of religion is penance, or tapasya, austerity. And that is specifically meant for the vanaprasthas, because after living in household life, one gets comfortable and one gets addicted to so many pleasantries. And one forgets that one is going to die. And if one is addicted or habituated, or one's mind is focused upon material pleasures at the time of one's death, then one is forced to accept another material body. So this Vedic system of the Vanashrama system, especially this ashrama system that's being described here, is to counteract the materialistic tendency. So first, education. So getting a good start, the roots are put in the soil in life so that they grow and flourish, the spiritual roots. And then even if one gets married and gets entangled in household life, then one will have a foundation of knowledge and training and will not become fully addicted. One will remain somewhat detached. And then, after remaining in household life for some time, then vanaprastha, literally living in the forest. Prahlad Maharaj tells his father, vanam gato yad harimashweta. You give up this grihamandakupam, this dark well of household life, where you fall into that well and you can't get out, thinking, oh, who will take care of this one, and who will take care of that one, and who will provide this, and there's not enough of this, and oh, never, never, never enough. So he says, vanam goto pi, that you leave the household of life for the forest. And the best of forests is Vrindavan. And there, what to do in Vrindavan? Hari Asreta, you take shelter of Hari. And that taking shelter means that this tendency that has been developed, naturally develops in household of life, to organize things around one's own comforts, is broken by the practice of tapasya, austerity, penance. And then finally, the final order of life is this sannyas ashram, and that is meant for the fourth leg of religion, is truthfulness. So what is sannyas ashram has to do with truthfulness? It has to do with preaching. Sannyas is meant for preaching. Preaching what? Preaching the truth. It means shaking people, even though no one likes to be shaken. And sadhu means one who cuts, and guru means heavy. No one likes to be shaken. No one likes to be cut. No one likes the heavy weight to be placed on them. But this is the business of the sannyasis, especially, to preach strongly that we are not the body, that we are souls, and we should not waste our lives entangled, engaged only in material activities. Because, why? What will be the end of our materialistic plans is that this body is going to crumble. It must. So therefore, prepare. And we'll see later, Vidura is hearing this now from Maitreya, and in the fourth canto we'll hear how he hears of kings who have been wasting their lives And then when he finishes hearing from Maitreya, he goes back to the palace of Hastinapur, not to enjoy, but to preach to his brother Dhritarashtra and say, get out. We heard this actually already in the first canto. Were you here for that? Yeah. Get out, he says, Dhritarashtra. You're dying. Can't you see it? We close our eyes to the fact that you're dying. Get out of the comforts of household alive. Die with your consciousness. In the last days of your life, focus your consciousness on Krishna. And he spoke so heavily to Dhritarashtra, but he cut him free with his sharp words. So Dhritarashtra actually did leave, went to the forest, and died quite a heroic death, and was spiritually elevated. So this is the Vanashrama system. And it is a social order, again, it is a culture meant for spiritual qualities to develop. And in today's culture, there is student life is meant for enjoying the senses and training how to get a good job. This is the perfection, to have a good job. And then when you have a good job, what can you do? You can have your own house. The most glorious thing, you can have your own house and close the door and do whatever you want and raise your family and have a pool and a pool table and a stereo and a this and a carpet and wow, wonderful, and a dog in your house. And kids, and each of the kids can have their own room. And then when you're old, you can move to a retirement village, if you can afford it. And then you can die, and no one will see you sick, and your body's shriveling, because we don't want people to think that that's the end. Horrible. And what the old people do? There's so much propaganda about this nowadays. I don't know if you've noticed this, but there's so much propaganda that there's no stopping you from enjoying. You can keep your body healthy, you can dance, you can boot scooting, you can enjoy, you take some pills, you can enjoy that which has been condemned. Sex life. And you can have birthday parties, and all the old people get together and call each other boys and girls, and they can play tennis, and they do arts, and they have social events. But they forget. What do they forget? That, oh, where is this one? We haven't seen him in a few days. Where is he? Oh, we don't want to talk about what happened to that one. And they forget that their numbers are diminishing and no one wants to think about this. So this is materialistic culture that is not meant, it is meant to cultivate illusion, attachment and illusion and rebirth. And the Vedic culture is meant something very different. So Brahma created all these in specific order. Then, the thread ceremony for the twice born was inaugurated, as were the rules to be followed for at least 1 year after acceptance of the Vedas, rules for observing complete abstinence from sex life. So much emphasis is given to the abstinence of sex life. Why? Because this is what binds us to the material world. It forces us to take a material body. It fixes us in the concept that we are here to enjoy life, to enjoy. And it fixes us to looking at the world to exploit it. It fixes us in the bodily concept of life. Aham mameti, guryameti tu cham. Aham mameti, thinking this is mine. This is me. And then everything is mine to enjoy. So it is just the opposite of Western culture. So we can never, the Krishna consciousness movement can never actually really, if we're preaching as Prabhupada preached, not that we should really imitate, but if we're preaching the way Prabhupada preached, we can never become just, you know, a subculture. Just be accepted like we're just like you, just like there are Baptists and then there are Uniting Church members and then there's Hare Krishna. So in one sense, we want to be accepted, naturally. This Prabhupada was very happy when Krishna Conscious Movement was accepted as bona fide religion. But yet, the message of Krishna Consciousness rubs exactly the opposite. It cuts open exactly what the contemporary civilization is trying to tie very tightly. It cuts it, and they're trying to tie it. Prabhupada actually one time brought the GBC men together and told them all the leaders, and he said, our whole business is to stop sex. So radical. And what is, if one looks anywhere, the whole business is exactly the opposite. And we are products of that culture, so very difficult. So, vocations in terms of Vedic injunctions were also created. Various professional duties in household life and the method of maintaining a livelihood without anyone's cooperation by picking up rejected grains. So these will be discussed in more detail in the seventh canto, towards the end of the seventh canto, when Vanashrama system is described by a great sage to Prahlad Maharaj. And this is one of the ways, a legitimate way, that a Brahmana can maintain himself. So a Brahmana, in an emergency situation, he can even adopt the profession of buying and selling things. But he's not to adopt the profession of a dog. That's how it's described. It was also described in the second canto like this. Not as a dog, meaning he can't work for someone else. Because if you work for someone else, then you have to do what they say. You have to act as their agent. Otherwise, you're afraid they're going to fire you. So you're implicated in so many sinful activities. So preferable to working for somebody, which is considered very degrading, is even going out and picking up rejected grains from a market or a field and feeding yourself and the family like that. So one would be considered a low person in today's culture, but at least there is some integrity. At least you're not, you know, what's considered the most wonderful thing, having a job, working for someone when they pay you, is considered like being a household dog and getting scraps from someone as they exploit you. So that is considered damaging to one's integrity. So very different, very different. Prabhupada explains in the purport, he mentions his Guru Maharaj. He says, during student life, the brahmacharis were given full instructions about the importance of the human form of life. Different from animal life, the soul taking its birth within animal body. Brahma sukham tvanantam, that it is meant, Rishabhdev Maharaj said, to get unending Brahma sukh, unending greatest happiness, tvanantam, unending. And instead, if we use the human life for petty sense gratification, which is available for hogs and dogs and monkeys and rats and birds, it is such a waste. So the brahmacharis got the training. Thus the basic education was designed to encourage the students to become free from family encumbrances. Only students unable to accept such a vow in life were allowed to go home and marry a suitable wife. Otherwise, the student would remain a permanent brahmachari observing complete abstinence from sex life for his whole life. It all depends on the quality of the student's training. So nowadays, the quality of the student's training practically makes it impossible. One time in Melbourne, Prabhupada said, if one can remain, he's talking to a group of his students, if one can remain celibate from the ages of 16 to 21, one's brain becomes so fertile for spiritual realization. And then he looked at all the devotees, because they had ruined their lives already. And then he said, but if you chant Hare Krishna, everything will be okay. But yet, if one can remain pure in this way in one's youth, one has such an opportunity for spiritual advancement. Prabhupada continues, we have the opportunity to meet an avowed brahmachari in the personality of our spiritual master, Om Vishnupad Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Goswami Maharaj. Such a great soul is called the Naishtika Brahmachari, fixed. So Brahma's creation of the Vedic system continues. The four divisions of retired life, he describes the four divisions of Vanaprastha and then the four divisions of the sannyas, renounced order of life. Then the science of logical argument, logic. Thereafter the art of literary expression, how to express things in writing perfectly, was generated from the hairs on the body of the almighty Prajapati Brahma. The principal Vedic hymn, Gayatri, was generated from the skin, Trishtup from the flesh, Anustup from the veins, and Jagati from the bones of the Lord of the living entities. I think these are Vedic hymns, types of with different meters of Vedic hymns. The art of writing verse, Punkti, became manifest from the bone marrow, and that of Brihati, another type of verse, was generated from the life breath of the Lord of living entities. And then Brahma's soul was manifested as the touch alphabet, the sparsha alphabet. His body is the vowels, his senses is the sibilant alphabet. So these are the different positions describing the Devanagari or Sanskrit alphabet. Is parts of it are differentiated. They have different, the consonants have different names according to where the tongue is situated. So the sparsha alphabet is when the tongue is touching, the sibilant is something different, the S type of sound, and the vowels, of course, are different. So these were all manifest from Brahma. And all the purpose of all these things, literary expression, war, this, that, was, this is all elements of culture, logic, music, these were all meant for spiritual elevation. And now everything from logic to literary expression to war is meant for sense gratification and economic development only. So opposite, night and day, the culture is different. And then the sensual activities of Brahma were manifest as the seven notes of music. So that is the one more verse describing a few more verses describing the advent of the progenitors, practically the main progenitors, the main personalities who propagate the universe. They're called Manu and Satyarupa, his wife. So Brahma is the personal representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the source of transcendental sound. So Krishna used him. We could see how pious and pure he must have been, that Krishna used him to manifest the Vedic sound, the pure Vedic sound through Brahma. And he is therefore above the conception of the manifested and unmanifested. Brahma is the complete form of the Absolute Truth and is invested with multifarious energies. Thereafter, Brahma accepted another body in which sex life was not forbidden, and thus he engaged himself in the matter of further creation. O son of Kuru, when Brahma saw that in spite of the presence of sages of great potency, there was no sufficient increase of population, he seriously began to consider how the population could be increased. Brahma said to himself, "Alas," he lamented, because his service was to populate the universe, create the universe, and make sure that the living entities entered so that they could make spiritual advancement, or on the other hand, satisfy their material desires and get their results. But yet, the living entities weren't being generated fast enough. So he thought to himself, "It is wonderful that in spite of my being scattered all over, there is still insufficient population throughout the universe. There is no other cause for this misfortune." He wasn't able to do his service. There is no other cause other than destiny. Daivi, which means also Krishna's will, fate. So while he was thinking like this, absorbed in contemplation, and was observing fate or daivi working, two other forms, effulgent forms, came from his body. The two newly separated bodies united together in a sexual relationship, of course, according to religious principles. In other words, they became married. Out of them, the one who had the male form became known as the Manu, named Swayambhuva, and the woman became known as Satarupa, the queen of the great soul Manu. Thereafter, by sex indulgence, they gradually increased generation of population, one after another. In due course of time, he, Manu, begot in Satarupa 5 children, 2 sons, Priyavrata and Uttanapad. Priyavrata and Uttanapad, 2 sons of Manu. Most of the rest of the third canto and the fourth canto will be devoted to describing the descendants of Swayambhuva Manu through Uttanapad. And then, after that, in the fifth canto, the descendants of Swayambhuva Manu, when Uttanapad's family lineage stopped, then Swayambhuva Manu called Priyavrata and said, "Now you have to," he was a renunciant at that time, he said, "Now you have to take over and you have to become the king and start the generations again of the kings of the world." So that will be discussed in the fifth canto. So a descendant of Priyavrata of Uttanapad is Dhruva Maharaj, Prithu Maharaj, Puchini Barishad, on the fourth canto especially. And in the fifth canto, Priyavrata, his sons are Rishabdev in his lineage, and Bharata Maharaj, like that. So all this will cover this one after another. And then he had 3 daughters, Akuti, Devahuti, and Prasuti. So who they marry will be described also in the fourth canto. And Devahuti's wife of Kadama Muni has been already mentioned, because he was the son of Lord Brahma, and from him Kapila Muni will come, from Kadama Muni and Devahuti, the son of Swayambhuva Manu and Satarupa, the daughter, excuse me. So that will be discussed. So this genealogy will be discussed gradually. The father, Manu, handed over his first daughter, Akuti, to the sage Ruchi, the middle daughter, Devahuti, to the sage Kadama, and the youngest, Prasuti, to Daksha. Now that will be discussed in the fourth canto too. From them, all the world filled with population. Okay. So now we're going to hear about Swayambhuva Manu and how he dealt with Lord Brahma's request to populate the universe, so different from either the Kumaras or Rudra. So we'll hear this starting tomorrow, and then we'll lead us to the appearance of Varahadev, which will lead us to the killing of Hiranyaka, which will lead us to the visit of the great sages, the 4 Kumaras, to the Vaikuntha planets, which is a wonderful, wonderful, and very important pastime. very deep, deep spiritual significance. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions or comments?
I don't know what gave you insight that the message gave that from seeing these apparent difficulties brought to my head and being in some direction.
Well, one message is that don't even want to become Lord Brahma in the material world, better to go back home, back to Godhead. Even though Lord Brahma is so pious, so powerful, such a great, great, great devotee, even the head of the Sampradaya, such difficulties. And this is the very nature, because this is the very nature of the material world. Something good happens, then something bad happens, and to get the good, something bad happens, and something bad happens, and then something good comes from the bad. This is the very nature of the material world in such a way that that no one can be happy here, because it's always mixed. Always mixed. And even the great sages and the demigods, mixed. Fear is always there. So that's something. And yet another lesson from it is the great devotees, such as Brahma, for the service of Krishna, they're willing to undergo these kind of things. We could see this with Prabhupada. You know, when we look at Prabhupada's life, even his life, his great success in spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world, it's not like it happened by magic. And it's not that it happened all smoothly either. Oh, so many difficulties, so many casualties, so many broken hearts, so many failures in the midst of it. But yet Prabhupada remained undaunted and he kept on doing the service. His position was glorious. So that's the other side of it. When one has a service, one can remain fixed as Lord Brahma was fixed, regardless of the result. He was wondering what to do. It wasn't working. And from that wonderment even, something good happened. The actual conclusion, the result, the favorable circumstance occurred. That's all I could think of at the moment. And also, this has to happen in the material world. Because there are so many kinds of living entities, so many desires. There's the need for irreligion too. Any other questions or comments? Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.